AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hey everyone, Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com, we've done your homework. Hi, everyone. It's Saturday, and it's Chuck with a little Saturday Select episode for you. I dug deep in the archives, everyone, to talk about human cannonballs. It's part of our circus suite, circus arts suite, rather. And it's good stuff, How Human Cannonballs Work, from July 2011. An oldie but a goodie.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Kaboom, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. What are you doing? Oh, you doing the cheeks, huh?
Yeah.
People have we ever captured
it.
That?
Yeah, we did it once, and then people have asked occasionally, like, do the cheek thing again, and I want to do it like once every 150 shows, literally.
That's a good pace.
Don't want to overdo that.
So that'll be the third time soon coming up.
I think so.
Yeah. Show 450 right around the corner.
Right around the corner.
Chuckers, have you ever had Kaboom cereal?
No.
Dude, it was
such a thing.
Good. No, it wasn't good. The marshmallows were good. It was basically like Lucky Charms. I don't know who ripped off who.
Right.
But it was clown-themed rather than, you know, Irish-themed.
That's genius.
Yeah, but there was a clown on front, and he had a cannon, and that's where the name came from, Kaboom. It was a circus clown, circus
sure.
Cannon, Kaboom.
But then they realized clowns were scary as heck
yeah.
to most people, so
yeah.
It failed miserably.
I wrote this blog post recently. Did you read it?
About, I did.
Yeah?
That was a good one.
The clown giving clown therapy?
Yeah. People seem to like it, too.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice one. That wasn't my intro. My intro was about Hunter T.
Oh, well, let's hear it.
Do you remember?
Well, sure. You're probably going to reference his death wish.
Yes. So he, you know, he comes down with the cancer and shoots himself in the head. And regardless of how you feel about suicide, what happened next was his, as you said, I guess his death wish, which he made in life, ironically.
Yeah, there's two kinds of death wishes. There's a wish that you make upon your death that you would like for things to happen after you die. And then there's the Jolly Brunson death wish.
Nice. That was good Chuck Bronson.
Well, that's a Simpsons character, too, but it's a Simpsons character. Who,
right. The mustachioed sales clerk.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he clearly references Charles Bronson.
Yeah. Anyway, what happened to Hunter T was he was cremated, and he had his remains shot out of a cannon.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, thanks to Johnny Depp helped that dream come true.
Yep.
Because he has tons and tons of money to make that happen.
Yes, he does. It was quite a cannon, too.
Oh, yeah.
And we've talked before about how I want my dead body shot out of a cannon.
We have indeed.
I'm not so sure anymore. Maybe. Who knows?
It would be, after reading this article and the physical requirements, mm-hmm. It would be kind of gruesome. It wouldn't be like, unless they stiffened you up somehow, you would come out in a big, like a dead body would.
That's what I've always imagined, though.
Okay.
That's what I see flying through the air.
Oh, I thought you saw yourself like shooting through like,
no, a
rocket toward the stars.
No, like flopping like through the air and doing like half somersaults and twists.
Where
I remember,
did you want
to land
on?
I was going to be naked, too.
Oh, God.
I was going to land on the Kansas prairie and let the vultures finish me off.
All right.
We'll see.
Coop's
still
like,
an idea.
Bring it. I got a backyard for you.
I think that's how we met Coop. He offered. He was like, hey, I live in Kansas and I can get this done. Yeah.
All right.
So we'll see. But I think that that's an image that people can have in their head while we talk about how human cannonballs work, right?
Yeah.
Because like you said, there's a lot to it. But one of the things that's not to it, and I think it's funny that people wonder how you can shoot somebody out of a cannon and the gunpowder doesn't blow them up. There's no gunpowder.
Of course there's not.
I don't understand how someone cannot understand that intuitively.
Yeah, because I think people want to believe that they're being fired out of a cannon instead of a long piston enclosed in a tube.
Yeah.
With a fake boom and a flash.
Yes.
For effect.
Okay. So I guess it's the fake boom and the flash. They're buying it.
Yeah. Well, that's the idea. From the beginning, that was the idea.
So, yes. And it has long roots.
Indeed.
Back to the 19th century, back to the UK, which, by the way, I've noticed. Did you notice from, like, this article and doing any supplementary research, the UK is big into human cannonballs?
I think they're big on just this whole circus experience.
Okay.
They were the original showmen.
Yeah?
Sure. They own the world.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Yeah. And they sold it.
And when you own the world, you have an obligation to entertain the world.
And they did so by human cannonballs.
That's right.
Specifically, something called a projector is the I guess, grandfather of the human cannonball cannon, right?
Yeah, the Farini projector.
Right.
1871, George Farini, basically, it was like a catapult, like a spatula.
Right.
That would just flip people and stop, and people would go flopping and flying through the air.
Yeah. And they go, oh, God, I regret this.
Yeah. Specifically, Lulu, who was a man dressed as a woman, because mm-hmm. that always adds to the comic effect.
Right.
Put a dude in a dress. And he was the first person in America to get flapjacked with Farini's contraption there.
Yeah. And not only did he do that, he sailed 25, 30 feet into the air. And was caught by someone on a trapeze.
Yeah.
So as we go through this, I don't want you to just think about my dead body being shot onto the Kansas prairie. I want you to think about how difficult it is to catch somebody on a trapeze who's just been shot out of a cannon. While you're on a trapeze, you're swinging at just the right point,
yeah.
hitting them just the right way, and then taking their forward momentum and yanking them another way on the trapeze.
Yeah, well, this, in fairness, Lulu wasn't caught by someone. He just actually grabbed hold of the trapeze. But there are people later on in this article who were caught by people on the trapeze.
Right.
Just want to get that.
So
if someone out there is like, no, Lulu.
I wonder.
There'd be one person who knew that.
So the Farini projector was invented in 1871. It was obsolete by 1880 because this is the year that a 14-year-old girl named Rosa Marie Richter, whose stage name was Zazzle, right?
Great, great grandmother to Andy Richter.
No.
I'm just kidding.
Okay. Great stage name, though, right?
Oh, sure.
Zazzle.
Oh,
she's yeah. 14, and she, at the behest of one P.T. Barnum, climbed into the first cannon, mm-hmm. human cannonball cannon, that is designed like today's modern cannons.
Well, so, yeah, sure.
And she was shot out of it, and shortly after that, within a few performances, she broke her back and was the first casualty of the human cannonball.
Yes, and this first cannon used springs, and they employed the blast, the fire, and the boom to make people think. And back then, they probably really bought it.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet.
You know?
People were so dumb back then. and there's a very famous picture of her climbing into the cannon. It's called, like, Beautiful Girl and Huge Gun or something like that.
I love that our forefathers, like, invented everything and, like, built the world. And we're like, they're so dumb. Yeah. What a bunch of stupid people.
Yeah. Well, it's harder and harder to build and discover new things now because that was all the easy stuff. Like you and I could have discovered all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Now it's just more and more difficult. You have to really look for subtleties.
You're right.
Yeah.
So we say thanks to no one.
Yeah. So the late 19th century is just the human cannonball idea just takes off, right? Thanks to Zazzle, yeah. Thanks to George Loyal. He was the one who was shot out of a cannon and would be caught by a woman on a trapeze.
That's right.
At the Yankee Robinson Circus, right?
Yes, that's incredibly difficult.
It is, and you think about it, like, I think I've even seen that before, like, in person at a circus when I was a kid. But now that I've researched and read this, I'm like, I can't imagine how difficult that has to be, how everything has to be totally precise, and that these circus performers must spend like all day practicing every day
to
make sure. Yeah, and not just the timing. There's a lot of other stuff that you have to take into account, right?
That's right.
It's not just get in this cannon, we're going to push you out.
No, Josh, because the little sled that you're basically in goes forward at a force of 3,000 to 6,000 pounds per square inch of pressure.
Right. We should say compressed air is now the preferred means of shooting that little piston forward, right?
Yeah.
And you're in a little capsule. Like, imagine Mork's egg.
Okay.
But with the top cut off.
Yeah.
So you're in the barrel in what amounts to a bullet in the barrel, a bullet with the top cut off. And that bullet is attached to the cannon. So when the compressed air shoots it out, the cannon stops, but you keep going.
That's right.
But it shoots you out at a, what did you say, like 3,000 to 6,000 pounds per square inch of pressure?
Yeah.
Yeah, that produces some force.
That's a lot. And that's why you can't just be like all limp, you know, that would crush you. You know, you have to be extremely strong and rigid, and your legs have to be taut. Like, you can't just be like, all right, shoot it off.
Right.
Or like your dead body. That's why it would be so gruesome.
Yeah. I wonder if I'd just explode in blood at the end of the cannon.
I don't know, maybe.
That'd be sweet.
But with the Big Daddy cannons these days, you can go horizontally about 200 feet or vertically, which they say that's where the oohs and ahs come from, mm-hmm. as high as 200 feet. And then speeds up to 60 to 70 miles an hour.
Right.
So you're hauling.
You are hauling. You're also under some tremendous force, right?
Oh, yes.
So
G-force.
Yeah. You got about 9 Gs during launch and 12 Gs at impact, and we'll talk about that later. But Chuck, the Dodonpa, right?
Yeah.
It's a roller coaster in Japan.
Uh-huh.
It has the highest acceleration. It's 2.7 Gs.
Jeez.
Yeah. So imagine 9, right?
Yeah.
This is you're putting this human body under a lot of stress right then.
Yes, and you fly out a long way, and that's why you have to take into account the things we briefly mentioned, like wind speed, body weight, obstacles like the guy wires and the tent for the net and the mm-hmm. poles for the tent.
And we mentioned that in Sniper, remember?
Yeah.
We're talking about the bullet trajectory, and they have to take into account, like, humidity.
Yeah.
So do people who set up human cannonball cannons. And usually I get the impression the human cannonball is the manager in charge of this whole act. They don't just come out and they're like, all right, I'll get in.
Is it already?
You guys did it right.
Yeah, and some carny, like, puts out a cigarette and is like, yeah, it looks good to me.
Yeah, right.
No, that's not the case. A lot of planning goes in because they make a point. It's pretty easy to get into a cannon and get shot out. Although, like we said, you got to be really strong and stuff. But the landing part is the crucial part, obviously.
Right.
Because a 50 by 25 foot net might look pretty big when you're standing on it, but when you're 200 feet away and 200 feet up, it might look like a postage stamp to you.
Right. And, I mean, this is a big deal.
And you want to hit that net.
You want to hit it in just the right place, too.
Sure.
Yeah, so to make sure that the person hits the net— test dummies are used. A test dummy is a human cannonball's best friend because you can shoot a test dummy out as much as you want until you figure out whether or not you've got the barrel trajectory just right, if the temperature is a problem, what have you.
Make your adjustments early.
Right. Yeah. And so they just shoot a test dummy at the net until they have it just right. And then they I guess they feel that they're confident they're going to try their luck at it.
Yeah. And like you said, you got to hit the net at the proper place too, which is generally the rear third, because when you hit something going down at an angle like that, you're going to bounce backwards.
Yeah.
Not like pop straight up or go forward.
Right.
So you don't want to hit it on the first third because then you'll bounce backwards off the net. So yeah, it's pretty specific.
It is.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Chuck, who does this?
Crazy circus people. Circus families. It's always families.
Yeah.
You know? Like, once you get into circus, then you've almost guaranteed that your kid is going to do that.
Yeah.
So you want to talk about some of them?
Well, yeah. The one, I think I'd heard of these people even before this this article. But the Zucchini family? Zucchini.
The Zucchinis.
The Zucchinis have been doing, they've been performing in circuses since the 1920s, and apparently they stopped in the 90s. They're like 70 years is enough for us.
The Zucchinis are hanging up our little fancy shoes.
Right. And in that time, there were seven brothers in the family.
Mm-hmm.
Five of them became human cannonballs.
What,
and that's
the
just the brothers. There was also a sister, too, who
really?
Did human cannonballing, yeah.
I'm just dying to know what those other two dudes. It's like Eli and Peyton Manning's brother that most
Todd.
People go, there's another brother.
Right.
Like, well, what does he do?
He's the oldest, wasn't he? And he used
I
to, like,
so.
He was like a big man on campus at Ole Miss, but that was it. He just partied.
Doesn't play football, though.
Nope.
So he's not beloved by his father, Archie.
Yeah, I'll bet.
So not true, probably. They worked with the Ringling Brothers, the Zucchinis did, who obviously a big name in circuses.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of pushed the envelope. Hugo and Victor, the brothers, did a little double barrel gag that went over pretty well. And Mario would get shot over Ferris wheels, like two Ferris wheels.
Yeah.
Mario Zucchini.
Two Ferris wheels. Not on top of one another.
No.
Still,
one after the other.
Right. That's quite a
weird.
Quite a feat.
And then John Weiss, Human Bullet.
Yeah, he started out as a clown, apparently.
Oh, really?
He did 5 years as a clown and then made the very rare jump to Human Cannonball.
From clown to cannonball? That's
yeah.
Rare?
Okay. And apparently his first shot... sent him 6 feet.
Really?
Yeah.
That oh, his, boy.
Yeah, that was his first one.
Did he do it as a clown? Do you know?
No, or? I don't think so. I think that would have been a mockery to the human cannonball tradition.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't want to do that. And then there's the Smith family, also a very popular circus cannonball family.
Well, did you talk about John Weiss?
Well, he was one of the most prolific cannonballers.
Yeah.
Did he die doing it?
No.
Oh, okay.
Did you mention how many times he's done it?
No. 5,000?
That is a lot of time to be shot out of a cannon.
I did just kind of breeze over that.
Yeah, right. 5,000 times, and he started in 1987.
Yeah.
So he was doing it for a little while there, for years, I guess. He was doing it once a day, 6 days a week, 50 weeks a year.
Yeah, you're right. That's a lot of blasting.
That is a lot. That's a lot of, I mean, especially what we know about what the pressure it exerts on a body.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that's rough work.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, we've pointed out how it is safe, but more than 30 people have died doing this over the years.
Okay, so that pops up in this article. 30 people have died as human cannonballs.
Yeah.
There's a British historian who died a few years back. His name is A.H. Cox. He says that there's been only about 50 people to ever be human cannonballs.
What?
And 30 have died.
Really?
Yeah. I thought that was kind of significant enough to be put into this article.
Enough to ward me off of human cannonballing.
So 30 out of 50 have died. Wow. And that's just who died. Others, you know, like...
broke her back.
Zazzle broke her back. Yeah, we'll get into that gruesomeness soon.
Was it Lulu that broke her back?
50.
Or Zazzle?
Zazzle.
Okay. All right, so back to the Smith family. They are the modern cannonball family that are pretty awesome. David Cannonball Smith Jr.
Mm-hmm.
has spent much of his life inside of a cannon.
Yes. Have you been on their website?
No. Was
it's
it awesome?
It's pretty funny. He's described as having a dynamic personality. I like that.
It's better than saying he has a dynamite personality. That'd be pretty bad.
Yeah.
But David the Bullet Smith Jr. is a son in
Oh, I'm sorry. He's the one with the dynamic personality.
Okay. His dad was a real snooze.
I don't know.
He bested his dad's record of by flying 193 feet.
Yeah.
So that's a lot.
But his dad still holds the highest at, I think, 203?
201, yeah.
201 feet, 61.2 meters for our friends outside of America.
Yeah, that's one that was over two Ferris wheels.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yep.
Oh, should you mention the DARPA thing? I thought that was completely stupid and ridiculous.
Did you think so?
Yeah.
I think it's kind of cool. I think if DARPA could perfect this, then it could take the human cannonball art to a whole new level.
We'll spill it.
But basically DARPA, the Defense Research Project, right?
Yeah.
There's an A in there somewhere.
Advanced.
Yes, thank you. They were looking at, I think they filed a patent for basically a human cannonball cannon that has like a sled chair, right?
Mm-hmm.
That shoots you up. I think they said they can get a first responder, special ops, a firefighter on top of a five-story building in 2 seconds. So basically their idea is to take the human cannonball concept mm-hmm. and just shoot people on top of buildings to go fight fires or to go snipe people or whatever.
So I get that. It's the landing thing that they say is the hardest part in real cannonballing. So what's going on there?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I have no idea.
Okay.
I don't know if they were like, well, we've got this part. Now let's go figure out the other part. But that's kind of the big joke or the big underscore among human cannonballers is it's not a problem shooting somebody out of a cannon.
Right.
It's the landing that's the important part.
Yeah.
Right?
Or in this case, if you're shooting someone on a building, if you're off there, then it's all of a sudden you're a cartoon. And you smack into the building and then slide very slowly down.
Except unlike a cartoon, you leave a trail of blood when you slide down.
Yeah, and you slide down fast.
Yeah.
And then there's more blood and body parts on the street.
Yes. Which has happened.
I'm sure it has.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's been a lot of accidents. As we've said, out of 50, 30 human cannonballs have died, right?
It's a lot.
And to prevent this, you know, these people stay in tip-top shape, right?
Yeah, sure.
You have to work out your core. You have to have a strong back. You need to be able to brace yourself, like you said, and really just go totally rigid so when you're shot out, you're not crushed.
Yeah, you need to become a projectile.
Right.
Because all you're wearing is a helmet, maybe a little padding.
Yeah.
But a helmet's not going to do much if you miss your net.
No. And the net is very important. A lot of people use airbags as well, right?
Yes.
There is a guy who's named Elvin Bale.
Yeah.
He's the human space shuttle.
Poor Elvin Bale.
He used airbags, and he is a victim of circumstance if there ever has been one, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was big in the 70s and 80s until, I believe, 1986.
87. Yeah.
When he went through all the tests, shot his crash test dummy out. It landed fine in these airbags where he calculated they should be. And what he didn't know is that his crash test dummy had gotten wet, which made it much heavier, which completely changed the dynamics of its test run.
Yeah.
So when he shot himself out, he missed the airbags, right?
He did. He
sailed right over them.
This is in Hong Kong. And he said that he knew, quote, I could see where I was going and that it was too far, too fast. So he knew in midair, he was conscious enough to be like, oh, crap, I'm not going to hit the airbag. And apparently the dummy, because when I read that, I was like, well, how does this happen?
Yeah.
When that's the only safety thing you can do, how do you have a soaked dummy? Apparently it was left in the rain, and they're filled with sand. And so the outside of it dried, but the sand was still wet on the inside, so it didn't, like, feel wet to the touch when they were testing it. And he said he remembered it feeling like it was in slow motion and that his brain actually thought he could solve this problem in midair aerodynamically. Like, do something like, I can do this and shorten the trip and land upright, which might save me. But instead, he overshot it by just a few yards and slammed feet first into the floor.
Oh, man.
Shattered his ankles, a knee, a leg, and his spine. And he's paralyzed from the waist down.
Yeah.
And that is very sad.
Yeah. He mentions the aerodynamics, right? Like, there is a specific way you want to land.
Yeah, you want to do that little easy somersault.
Right.
And land on your back.
Yeah. That's the way to land.
That's the preferred way.
But you also said something that brought to mind the idea that the G-force that we talked about earlier, it's been shown to produce a loss of consciousness in people. So that's another danger that you know, when you're sailing, you want to, like, stay like a projectile.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're blacked out, you're going to be like a dead body.
Like you.
Yes. And Elvin Bale's not the only person that something horrible has happened to, obviously,
Right? Yeah, Matt Cranch just this year.
Yeah, a few months ago.
In April.
Yeah.
He, and this is just a nightmare scenario, he got blasted off, and right after he blasted off, the net collapsed.
Yeah.
So how does that happen?
I don't know.
That's probably what he's asking.
Well, he died. He landed on his head and died.
He did die, so that is not what he's asking. That is what his family is asking, probably via a lawsuit, would be my guess.
That was in Great Britain, too.
Very sad.
And remember I mentioned a zucchini sister. The zucchinis used to do these double barrel stunts where they two would be shot out at the same time, usually next to one another or along parallel to one another. Well, she and another brother had an act where they'd be shot in the same direction as one another.
And pass by and like high five?
Yeah. Well, they collided and she broke her back.
That's just a bad idea.
That was a bad idea. But the sad thing is if you look at modern people, like the modern cannonballers, they are safety conscious. They were just like a net collapsed or their dummy was wet. Which that makes it even sadder to me. If you get shot, 200 feet into the air at your brother at 60 miles an hour.
I wonder how close.
And you break your back, then something. That was part of the equation.
I wonder how close they intended to go to one another. Because obviously the closer the better. Like if they were 20 feet apart, it's it's not as impressive. So they probably wanted to get it tight for the effect. But can you imagine all of a sudden, like when you see that coming straight at you, you probably have the same realization, like, oh crap, this, I'm going to die by hitting my brother.
Sister, brother.
Very sad.
Yeah. Anything else?
That's it, man. Did we ever do the thing on Daredevils?
No.
I wrote an article on Daredevils, and maybe we should do that at some point. Okay. Or we've been talking about our Evel Knievel podcast. Maybe because he's a big part of that one. Maybe we can just cover it all.
Okay.
Sans Human Cannonball.
Yeah, we've got that one covered.
Done.
Okay. Well, if you want to learn more about human cannonballs, including how long it takes to accelerate a human cannonballer to their top speed, do you want to know? 1/5 of a second.
Really?
Yeah. You can find all that by typing human cannonball onto the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And from what you say, Chuck, it sounds like that'll bring up more than just one article.
Yeah, my Daredevil thing might pop up.
I said handy search bar at howstuffworks.com. That means it's time for listener mail.
That's right, Josh. I'm going to call this Underground Railroad. I'm writing in about Underground Railroad. I wanted to share a little bit of my childhood summers in upstate New York. My great-grandfather, Louis Loveland, made a home in Johnsburg, New York, in the Adirondacks. What's so funny?
Like, you know him.
Yeah, Louis. The home itself is incredibly cool and haunted. There's a very cluttered and dimly lit room hidden away behind the kitchen, which has a small organ buried beneath. Decades of stored and forgotten items. Family legend has it that the organ would mysteriously start playing at all hours of the night, thanks to spirits. As if that weren't enough, there's a very large barn behind the home, which has seen its better days. My sister and I were always warned to be careful when we went near the barn. Reason, because the earth beneath our feet could give away at any moment.
Well, that sounds like a terrifying summer house.
But there's a hidden tunnel beneath the barn. Because there's a hidden tunnel beneath the barn running from the back of the home, below the barn, and out into the mountains, right next to a strawberry patch that my great-grandfather planted 100 years ago. The tunnel was a part of the Underground Railroad, and I've been told it's one of the last stops in the Adirondacks that is still intact today. Though it varies, the tunnel is roughly 3 to 4 feet below the ground, about 5 feet tall, 4 feet wide, and 75 yards long, packed with dirt and rocks, and an absolute death trap to navigate without a flashlight.
Jeez.
The entrance from the home is just too dangerous to use anymore, but there is a way to drop into the tunnel via a hidden door in the barn, so long as you don't mind a mini landslide of dirt and hay following you into the tunnel, which I would. That's it. Once you carefully make your way through the tunnel, you emerge into sunlight and a strawberry field.
Nice.
Nice little treat if you're
and
on the
somebody hands you a warm, wet towel, a moist towel to refresh.
And that is from Alice in St. Louis.
Wow. Thanks, Alice. You could do that, couldn't you, Chuck? You've gone caving before.
I could do that.
You
sure.
Can handle it. Not me.
As long as it's buttressed.
I wonder if it is buttressed.
If Charles Bronson had anything to do with it, it is.
Yeah. If you have a great recipe for fresh strawberries, we want to hear it. You can wrap it up in an email, spank it on the bottom, kiss it goodnight, and send it to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on
people that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.